Hello and welcome to the Recovering from Religion podcast. Our mission here is to offer hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. What follows is the audio from selected videos posted on Recovering from Religion's YouTube channel. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
It is my absolute pleasure to introduce today Ito Autini. I must admit, when she reached out to us, I was super excited. The topic she's going to talk about today is something that nobody else is speaking about. So I feel really, really honored about having Ito today here with us. So the title is How Religion Relates to Disability. And I'm just going to give you a brief bio of Ito Autini's life, which is really unbelievable life. So get ready for this. So Ito Autini was born and raised in Morocco by a Jewish father and Muslim mother. Both parents died and she was raised by different family members. She did not attend school until the age of 17, as she was viewed as nothing but a slave to her family. She was stabbed by her uncle's wife at the age of 17 and lost her sight family and was left homeless in the streets of Morocco. She began school at the age of 17 for the first time, graduated high school and went to the university where she was awarded the Fulbright scholarship to study a master's degree in journalism in the United States. After graduating with her master's, she was approved for asylum to stay in the United States, and she is now a journalist, a human rights activist, accessibility advocate, and atheist. Today, we are also, we may hear a voice in the background, and that will be Ito's assistant, Amy. So we are going to have both of us today. So welcome, Ito and Amy, especially Ito, but yeah, also Amy. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so, so thankful that you have decided to join us in this RFRX session.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. This is Ito Autini. I am totally blind. And as Amaya said, I was born and raised in Morocco. And I was born in the Atlas Mountains, which is a rural area, about 3 to 5 houses, very far from each other. My parents were married according to traditions. There was no arranged marriage. So when my mother died, my father left me and he died later. But I stayed with my father's family. I was abused in many ways, psychologically, emotionally, sexually, physically, and mentally. And I didn't know anything. I didn't know that the other world existed but mine. And I was a slave to my family, just cooking, cleaning, and all of that. And when I was about 12, I moved to my mother's family and I was introduced to Islam for the first time. Morocco is a Muslim country. So I was converted or forced to convert. Because I was not educated, so I didn't know anything. Was practicing, praying 5 times a day, fasting Ramadan and Mondays and Thursdays and a lot of other additional days to fulfill the year according to how Islam requires people to do things. And when I was 17, my uncle's wife stabbed me and I became blind and I was left in the hospital, and I didn't know even how to count from 1 to 3. I wasn't even taught my birthday, or I didn't even know my birthday. I didn't know my name or my last name. So when I found nothing, I became homeless. I found there was no one for me, but I thought education would be my only way out. So I went to school and I started from the 7th grade. Due to my age, and I graduated high school and went to the university and was awarded the Fulbright scholarship after I graduated and came to the United States. And I was doubting a lot of things when I was at school in Morocco, especially from the 7th to the 10th grade. But by the 10th grade or 9th, I was already an atheist, but I couldn't say it publicly because it would make me lose my life. Of course, I lost my friends. I lost the community in Morocco. I was rescued by an American couple when I was homeless. That's how I was not homeless so anymore. For after 6 years, of course, they rescued me from homelessness. And the first thing I did is I removed a headscarf, and it was really hard. I tried to hide it. I tried to say that I removed my headscarf to just because my hair would drop or something. I tried to just use excuses, and I would say, well, faith is in my heart and all of that stuff to cope with the community. But it was really hard. And when I moved to the capital of Morocco, Rabat, in 2015, that was where I was a little bit okay, because I wasn't known there much, so people didn't know if I wore a headscarf or not. I decided to not put it as soon as I arrived there. And when I came to the States, I started using social media, and I didn't write anything, but I would share like videos. Sometimes I would go to the swimming pool with my friends and take a picture, and I received a lot of messages that led me to fear my life, and I ended up seeking asylum after I graduate. And thanks to the US government, thanks to my lawyer and my friends for all the support that I've received here in the United States. And I really appreciate the US government for their strong support towards my case, despite of the COVID-19 and all of that. And I was awarded, approved for asylum in last May. So now I'm an asylee, and I can't wait to start to talk about disabled people and religions, how disabled people are treated and how they are oppressed by different religions.
Right.
And how a lot of disabled people find it so hard to come out of it, including myself and a lot of people I know personally, just for the sake of fulfilling needs or the community, or most of the times it's the needs that we have as a people with disability, or social as well as physical needs require us to hide or pretend sometimes, which is psychologically damaging. I feel very happy, and I started to enjoy life as soon as I became public about my atheism. And I don't say that I have a proof that some God or gods don't exist, but I don't believe in any organized religions, because it doesn't view me as a full human being, as a woman with disability who has achieved a lot. It doesn't give me my right, especially the one I was raised in.
Well, you are an incredible woman. You had you have a blog post over on our blog on the Medium, and I read through it. It was just incredible. You have an incredible story. Let's back up a little bit. And you talked about you began to kind of doubt Islam, or what you were taught, your beliefs as you were going through your education. You're kind of questioning things. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of what triggered it, what kind of questions you were asking yourself?
Mm-hmm, sure. So as I said, I think when I was with my dad's family, so I was not educated, and my father's family is Jewish by culture, but they were kind of, it was weird. They were like praying to the fire. They were like boiling water and like sprinkling it in the house so that the ghosts won't come. Like, I actually was talking to ghosts, and I thought they talked back to me and all of that stuff. It was fun. But when I went to my mother's family, a lot of abuse, which was really hard, which I didn't understand. And I thought, well, why there is a good God, but still there's a lot of abuse. So when I went to school, I started from the seventh grade. So in Morocco, we're required to take Islamic education. So in my seventh grade, I had to memorize some chapters from the Quran. And I I tried and I couldn't. Like, it just, it because it has some rhymes. Arabic is a beautiful language, but I couldn't memorize it. And, you know, I had to like recite it to my teacher, but there was no way I could do it. And he was angry at me saying, "You're smart, but you couldn't do this. Like, and you have to memorize this." And I said, I memorized it when I was little, but I forgot because everyone in Morocco, most of the kids, I would say, are, I was not educated, but I had to memorize the Quran so that I can pray with it. But it was like, it was hard for me to read it with Braille with my fingers so that I would memorize it. But that pushed me, in addition to, of course, homelessness. I was homeless and I prayed a lot. I was really, when I was homeless, I tried to be a good Muslim, or maybe I was, I don't know, but I prayed like to God, to Allah, so that nothing would hurt me. But actually the opposite happened. I was sexually abused, which led to 3 abortions. And it's really hard with disability and going through that. And I thought, well, I think I have to dive into research. And I read the 6 books and I read the Quran and I tried to find something about disability and I couldn't find anything. And my father left me when my mother died, and my father was very rich, and he died. Both of my parents were murdered, but he died in 2011. But I didn't know him, and when he died, I was studying actually about inheritance, and I read about Mecca, why people have to do the trips, and I was actually excited to go. And my Islamic education teacher was so proud of me being the best student in the class. And I remember he would ask my classmates who started from the first grade, like very simple questions, like what age Muhammad died or something. And they wouldn't answer it, but I answered everything despite of me being homeless, not having books, like whatever my teacher would say in the class, I will just remember everything. And I, as I said, like inheritance was the big thing that got me, like women have to take you know, less than men. And there's nothing about disabled women. So in the 21st century, of course, I am highly educated. I can get a job now. And I can work whatever I want. I can be a freelance journalist. One article could help me. I am like, I'm very successful. But if it is a disabled woman with no degree, I would say, not education, because education is I think knowledge, but with no degree, and she or he or they would need the support, and I see that religion doesn't have that. Besides, you know, you're gonna get, for example, Islam states that we're gonna get our eyes, for example, in my case, when I die. Well, no, I want something now. I don't want to. I'm beyond happy being blind. I enjoy life to the fullest and I have achieved a lot. So blindness doesn't stop me from anything. So why do I have to worry about it or say, well, that's your treat, you know, after you die. But what is my right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just another achievement of Ethos that I don't think we have mentioned is that English is her 7th language. 7th language, like that is crazy. And obviously though, you are very, like, you speak English absolutely beautifully, much better than me, and it's just my 3rd, like it's unbelievable. So I just really, really admire your strength and your brain, because it's just so, so impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I can count the number of languages I can speak on one finger. So having, you know, 2 hands is amazing to...
Well, no offense, sorry, but you're American, so we forgive you.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, that's me. That's you studied in linguistics, bilingual and multilingual and American.
So, Ito, from previous conversations, I know that you have spoken about how religious people treat you differently because you have a disability. Do you want to explore that idea a bit further here?
Yes. Yeah. So, for example, I can speak more about Morocco. So when I was, not only when I was homeless, and by the way, I would love to thank my rescuers, American friends, Fezzi and Thomas, for being the people who have achieved me, who have helped me achieve all what I've achieved, and all my other friends, including Mackay and Amy, who has been very, very supportive. In like, I really appreciate the people who've supported me. But yeah, so when I was not, as I said, not only homeless, when I was homeless, people wouldn't take the responsibility and say, you know, I'm responsible to help this woman because she is asking for nothing but education. But when I went to the university, at the time I was sponsored by an American couple, someone would come on the street and hand me Moroccan money, DH, dirham, is put it in my hand and say, pray for me. And I'd be like, God bless you. And they're like, no, that's not what I wanted. And I'm like, well, but I don't know what you want. I can't know what you want. And that was very, very like hard for me, not only because I am an atheist, but also because of the ability to not be able to read other person's mind. Or scientifically speaking, and I'm proud and I'm happy, I will never see again because my uncle's wife stabbed me and my eyes are useless. I will have the prosthetic eyes, which I am happy to just not have like the pain and all of that. But there's no way, like someone would come to me and be like, I'm gonna pray for you, you will see again. I'm like, instead of that, accept me for my disability. You know, I'm just looking for acceptance instead of that pity, or which I call, of course, self-pity. And I come to that conclusion by my education and logic. But other disabled people who are, you know, having to build their entire lives on a fake hopes, or, you know, a hope that will never. I have a friend who is blind and is hoping that one day, she's extremely Muslim, that one day she's gonna wake up and be able to see again. And she, by the way, had the same incident like me, was stabbed, which is, you don't have an eyeball, therefore you're not gonna see. Unless they have some talking robots, which it's not me who's gonna see, but it's a robot that's gonna talk. It's just, yeah.
So it sounds like people were kind of projecting, like they were trying to put themselves in your shoes and then projecting what they thought you would want onto what onto you. And is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, and also what they think I have to do. Like, for example, saying you've got to put a headscarf. Like, if you go to Morocco, a lot of women don't put a headscarf, but because I'm disabled, I have to be extremely holy, or I am nothing, because disability is already viewed as less, and plus atheism equals, you know, I don't know, or plus not even atheism, plus like declining some things to practice, like forced to go to the mosque, for example, or forced to know, I have a really loud voice, like, and I can't help it. It's my voice, and I'm glad because I'm blind and it helps for the radio, because that's what I love, journalism. But it's really hard when people try to dictate for me what I needed to do. Like, for example, when I graduated high school, I lost my teachers because they wanted me to go to study Islamic education. Well, I would be in jail by now if I did, because I would just say something that will piss off professors at the university or something. I chose to study what I wanted to study because that's number one, what I desire, and number two, that's where I see my future. So I don't think they had the right to do that, dictate for me how should I live or what should I believe in.
So did you find that you kind of had to pretend to be a believer in order to get some of your needs met?
Yes. So for example, I can give a lot of examples. For example, just rent, because in the States I've been moving around. It's really hard in Morocco to rent as a person with disability. So I had to pretend that I am religious so that I can do that. For example, with my teachers, with my friends. I lost all my friends after I said that I am an asylee in the US. I lost the remaining friends, I would say. I lost my teachers when I didn't choose Islamic education. I lost my university professors in my first university when I removed the headscarf. And I lost the rest when I said that I'm an asylee and I am an atheist. So pretending was the only way to get around. As I said, from A to Z, from even getting into public transportation, from even buying things from the store, from a lot, everything you need, not only the things that I needed the help with, you know, people giving me things or people helping me carry something or showing me around if I get lost or something. Not only those, but even, as I said, going to the store or you have to, like I had to pretend that I was religious, which was psychologically damaging. And that's why I am hoping now to be a voice for the voiceless and help the disabled communities to know that they are not alone and it's okay to go through that stage of life and they're gonna be okay one day, just like myself.
Yeah, I know you just mentioned before that you had like a process of removing your scarf. Do you wanna talk a bit more about that? Cause I feel quite curious cause you did touch on it, but I wanna, you know, learn more about how your process was. What kind of issues you face whilst doing it?
You mean for the surgery?
No, I mean for social kind of... sorry, my question wasn't greatly framed. I mean for social issues, like how people reacted.
When I was with my father's family, what was forbidden is to cut off your hair as a female. You have to live it. And that's something that I was punished for. When I went to my mother's family, I was forced to put a headscarf. And when I went to the university, because I'm blind, and in Morocco, we don't have sidewalks that are good to cross and everything is broken. So you have to rely on people outside. There is no way for a blind person to, you know, navigate on their own. So we have what we call Khwanjia, which are very religious people. So let's say I am walking on the street in Morocco and a person like that would see me crossing the street and the car is coming to hit me. They wouldn't help me if I am not putting a headscarf. And if it's a liberal person, that would be, you know, God created me and it's okay, she's blind, I've got to help her, they'll help me. And some people would like hold my stick from the bottom, the end of it. And that actually is very disturbing and very dangerous, more than like being alone with the car, because if someone holds your stick, then you wouldn't know if there is a hole or if there is a rock or if something.
Okay.
So the stick is the most important thing. So when I was in a blind school, I was like putting it when I would go to school and it was fun. If it's a blind teacher, I would remove it in a class. And so
that's great. So just to back up real quick, if someone, if I were to see someone who was using a cane and needed help across the street, picking up the end of their cane wouldn't be helpful at all. What would be like a good way to assist them?
I mean, just ask them. Just say, hey, do you need help? And they will say, yes. There are people who are happy to fold their cane and hold someone's arm. Because we don't bite, I promise. We're just normal people who happen to have some kind of disability. But for religion, it is specifically Islam, it is forbidden to touch women. So that was the only way they could do it. So when in that was in my first university in a small city, not in the capital. So when I just was so tired of it, and I removed it, so in the capital, they wouldn't touch me at all. So you've got to just have like whether A or B, there's no in between. So in the capital, it would be just people who are okay with me being like this. And in the capital, the most thing I faced was pity. People would be like, oh yeah, because you're blind, you're angry at God. And I'm like, I don't know how can I be angry at God that I don't even know if it exists.
Yeah, yeah. And they probably couldn't understand that from where they were at too.
Yeah, because they know that the God exists. It's really hard to just say that, hey, I'm different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So kind of going back a little bit, what you were saying isn't the first time I've heard about this, that some folks with disabilities have to sort of fake that they believe in the same things that their caretakers are believing in, or in order to get some assistance. Is that been your experience too?
Yes. Actually, so when my uncle's wife stabbed me, unfortunately, they didn't do any surgery, which is really sad, 14 years ago.
What?
And I was promised by many, many religious people that they will help me do that. And I had to pretend, like, you know, pray for it to happen. Or, for example, as I said, like for me to like have my landlord in Morocco be nice to me, I had to go with her to the mosque. If I didn't, I remember sometimes when I would say, well, I have school, I have to go to the French center, or I have to go to the American language center. And she'll be like, those infidels are going to destroy your faith. And I had to stay and go with her to the mosque. And if I don't, she would like be angry and tell me that she would call my American friends and tell them that I am doing something that would piss them off, and they will leave me and not take care of me anymore. So it is a kind of a weapon that even if some religious people, like in my case, would know that I'm just faking it, but for some reason it makes them feel comfortable that it's okay that I'm faking it.
As it's long basically as blackmail, really. Like, it's basically like threatening you. Like, it's not even an honest way of trying to convince someone of believing in the faith. That's just bizarre.
Yes. Yeah. That's how it's, yeah. It's that, I think how they react to it is like, you have to, like, I believe, therefore you have to believe. And even if your faith is, because if you try to pretend that, for them, they define it as your faith is not strong. Well, there is no strong or weak faith. I mean, there is faith or no faith. But for me, it has to be a fake faith so that I could survive.
Now, you experienced this in Morocco. Did you also experience this? Do you have a similar experience here in the U.S. Of that? Because
when I came to the States, I was introduced to Christianity when I was in Morocco. And actually, I liked it. I thought, you know, love everyone and all of that. And I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I didn't read the Old Testament, which is actually, most of it is the Quran translated, which is a lot of even ex-Muslim scholars don't talk about that. I don't know why. I hope that I can see someone talk about that. But I was introduced to Christianity, and for example, some of my friends would ask me to go with them to church, and I was a grad student and I couldn't, and I had cancer at my second year, and I had to deal with all of that and with my asylum process. If I would say no, they wouldn't talk to me, even though I never I never was a member of any church or anything. And also on the streets, sometimes I come across someone who would say, can I pray for you to be able to see again? And I just stop and let them do it and, you know, walk and just go and say thank you. And one day I was sitting next to my door in a chair listening to a book. And this woman came and she said, hello, how are you? And I thought, I know this person, because for me, I wouldn't talk to someone in that way if I don't know them. And I said, I'm good, thank you, I'm just reading. And she gave me a printed book, which is, for me, is an insult, because even my best friends, like for my birthday, my best friends have to send me credits for Audible. They wouldn't, because a printed book, a blind person can't read it, period. It's just, as I said, it's an insult. Even if someone brings me The End of Faith by Sam Harris as a printed book, I wouldn't even know if it's a book. I mean, I would just touch it and know, like, oh, what, like, it's a some book, but what is this? For me, it's useless. But I found out that the woman was a Jehovah's Witnesses, and she gave me a Bible, and I was telling her, please, I can't read it, I'm blind. And she was like, God is going to help you to read it.
Oh,
and
he was like,
please, just, I'm not going to be able to read it. And it was very uncomfortable. And like, for me, I hope that some religious people would understand when we say no to something, it means no. There is no other thing between no and yes, but no and yes. If you say yes to something, it's yes if you say no. And actually, I keep that Bible for a long time, because I respected, like, to just take and trash it. I didn't know what to do with it. Should I just go around and give it to someone on the street, or should I send it to my friends for their birthdays, or my atheist friends? Or, like, I didn't know what to do with it until one day I gave it to the library. Like, I'm glad I found where to put it.
Yeah. Wow, that is so unbelievably insensitive. And just, like, what is the point in telling someone, like, oh, God will cure you? Like, we have medicine for a reason. Like, if God would cure every single person with a disability, there wouldn't be any people with disabilities. Like, that is just incredible that they just decided to say that to you. I'm always blown away by people.
Yeah, but it's not, like, it's not, of course, we have to believe in evolution to know that there is no such thing as equality when it comes to, like, biology. You know, we are biologically different, therefore, some of us are born with disabilities, some of us are not. It's not, you know, like a designer that is just sitting out there and saying, you know what, this person is going to be born deaf, or this person is going to be born blind, or this person is going to be, for me, it was a human violence that led me to become blind. But there are people who are born with disabilities. And I think, instead of thinking about, oh, we have to fix them by just, you know, praying, or, as I said, false hopes, if science can do anything, like medicines, then it's okay to live with disability, because we can achieve a lot of things, just like myself. And there's a lot of disabled folks out there who have achieved a lot, including Helen Keller, where there was no technology. So if Helen Keller was able to achieve things without technology, so now we shouldn't even question disability. And we would say, oh, you know, you're punished from God, and you have to pray to God so that you can be saved, or you can be saved physically, not you know, spiritually, but physically, that, hey, you're going to be able to see again. That is just for me, I don't like it personally, because I am beyond happy being disabled. And if we help each other, like, for me, I give credit to my friends that have helped me to accept myself as a disabled person, so that I could achieve what I've achieved.
It almost sounds to me like folks who are disabled may be singled out by some of the religious folks, and perhaps they might be low-hanging fruit to bring them into the fold, or how do you feel about that? Like, am I off at all? What would be your kind of response?
I think we are, it's funny that I have this thing, what I call, we are like honey. It's easy to put on the bread. We are very attractive. I remember I was in a big event a year ago, and a lot of people, like, there was hundreds of people, a lot of people were coming to me, and, like, with different religion. I was for the first time introduced to Buddhism, and I was like, oh, wow, this is a lot. And I don't know what exactly makes disabled people more attractive to the religious people or religious organizations. I think for religious organizations, it's really good because a lot of religious people, like when I was religious and when I was pretending to be religious, people would see me as something kind of to lean on, saying, oh, if you're disabled and you accept a God with your disability, because, you know, it's a curse. So if I accept the God that cursed me, then for them, they have nothing to complain about. I think that's, as I said, it's like an umbrella that some religious people would use to cover themselves, to just, or like it's like a road that they have to pave so that it's going to be good to drive or walk in. You see what I mean?
Yeah. So for those who are listening to us and are also disabled and maybe in a situation in which they have what you're describing of having to, I don't know, or being lured in by a religious group and them having to pretend that they believe in that specific religion, is there any tip that you could give them, any sort of advice on how to cope with it better or how to manage it so that it's less of an issue for them?
Yes, I think the number one would be self-acceptance, like to just accept reality. Like for example, if it's needs or family-based, obligation, if it's like, oh, I am disabled and I'm gonna lose. Like I interviewed someone a year ago saying, well, I am disabled and I have church come to clean my house and everything. So I can't just say that I have questions. It's impossible for me. I think if it's need-based, the only advice I would give would be just be psychologically encouraged, try to reach out to people like recovering from religion or myself. Anyone is welcome to reach out to me and to give more tips, like how can you, when you face those things, how can you be strong to push them away from your brain. I think it's just thinking and the mind, how to use the mind to not take those things personally. And my favorite quote by Shakespeare in Hamlet, it says, there's no good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. So I think for me, what helped me survive is I had to think about those things as, number one, they are temporary. And number two, it's okay because they don't harm me physically. Yes, they harm psychologically and emotionally, but it's the only way. It's like, you know, it's like you have only one way and you can't turn left or right. And that's the only way to go forward. And after that, there is, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. And that light is something that we have to focus on. And I think this applies to disabled or non-disabled people who are stuck with some religious ideology that they cannot overcome in their current situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And thank you for providing that advice, because as I said, there is really nobody speaking about this issue. So I'm sure it's really, really valuable to anyone who has a disability who is listening to us, hearing about your advice. Now, I'm curious, have you experienced that religious people maybe react differently to able people versus people with disabilities not wanting to go to church? Do you feel like there is a different reaction from religious people when there is this, like, I don't want to go to church kind of, I don't want to say attitude, but like idea or behavior?
So as I said, like here in the States, the church, like if I say no, I just lose that person. Like for being friends with them, they just don't call me anymore. They don't text me anymore because I am no interest to them. But in Morocco, where I was forced to do it, of course I faced a lot. Like I would be, as I said, I would lose my rent. I would be, my landlord wouldn't open the door. She would tell me that she would accuse me of really bad things and call my American friends if I don't listen to her the next time. So it is, and like, for example, for I would speak again about Morocco, like non-disabled women are okay to not put a headscarf. I mean, families, they're unhappy with some of their like daughters. They have to hide it. A lot of my friends do remove headscarf when they go to the university and they have to put it back when they go home. But society mostly is okay with non-disabled. But for me, just a taxi driver would refuse to take me if I don't put a headscarf. So it is very, very weird way that they react to disabled. As I said previously, is I think because we have to be more holy so that we can undo what is done kind of thing, because it's punishment and we have to somehow be responsible for that.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So, you know, I the more and more that we're talking here and the more and more discussions that we're having over the course of this whole RFRX series, I'm kind of beginning to see more and more how me as a straight white male have like this certain privilege that I wasn't really able to identify beforehand. And so there's some language that I may use that is inappropriate. What would be a good way for me to kind of speak better about disabilities or abilities, or you know, what kind of language should I be either listening for so I don't say that, or be cautious to walk myself through?
I think some disabled people are sensitive. In this one, I can answer for myself. I am okay with whatever the language people use, as long as my boundaries are respected. Like, for example, let's say you met me on the street and you are going to help me cross, and I'll say, like, you would ask me, and if I say no, still you would come and grab me. Well, no, because my boundaries, I said no, and you can say, well, the car is coming or something, and I may say yes, because we have technology that can actually, the camera that can see if the cars are coming or not. But like, for example, one time I had someone who offered to help me cross, but they ended up walking with me home, and later on they came, they're Mormons actually, they came to my place at 10 p.m. and I was so scared, like, yeah. Who is knocking in my door at 10 p.m.? So yeah. It's not language, I think, about disability, it's more about actions. But language, I think it's too much of like people being very, very careful, like saying, should I use blind or visually impaired? Well, what's the difference? Or sightless, or someone who doesn't see the light. You know, it doesn't, for me, it fits the same purpose. It's, you know, eyesless or sightless or blind or visually impaired, all are the same. It's just the connotation of the word. And I think as a society or as a community, we have to bypass that. The words, like when someone would say those things, like lately someone asked me, are you a woman of color? I said, no. They said, how do you identify yourself? I said, nothing. And they said, why? I said, because I want to be everything. Therefore, I don't identify myself as anything. And I think we have to overcome those, as I said, like words or titles that we have to be careful to not use any type, because it depends on people's knowledge on the topic. Like if someone has never heard visually impaired and uses blind, for me, that person is, I wouldn't blame them, but someone who would come to me and be like, you know what, I am sure you will be able to see tomorrow, or you are a bad person, you are evil because you are atheist or because you are blind. I received a lot of like hatred messages from my ex-Moroccan friends saying, God has the right to blind both your mind and your eyes. And I'm like, Well, let's say that God blinds my eyes. That's fine. But my mind, how do you know? Like, how can you prove that God blinds? How can you, what is a blind mind after all? Like, how can you define blind mind? If like being smart, I am able to educate myself on all of that. But if my other mind, those persons know that is blinded, is something that I don't get. Like, as I said, those words are the words that shouldn't be used, especially when the disabled personality is sometimes because of needs, because of psychological needs that haven't met yet, or, you know, cultural or educational needs that haven't met yet for the person with disability. If they hear those kinds of words, it's really hard on them. For me, just block on Facebook and go forward.
It sounds like that what really needs to happen is just have an individual conversation. Like, how would you like to be addressed? How would you like me to speak? Or, you know, would you correct me if there's something that I say that doesn't work for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's from both sides. Like, for example, people would be next to me talking about me. Well, I can't hear them. Well, just talk to me directly. And I don't know how does that happen and why. And I don't know how to make those people understand that I can hear them. I'm not deaf. I am blind. If I were deaf blind, yeah, you could do that. If I were deaf, yeah, you could do that. But blind, like just understanding what blindness is, what being deaf is, what being paraplegic is, I think we have to acknowledge that we don't understand. Just a year ago, I was working on my research and I texted someone on social media saying, can you fill my survey? Are you blind? And the person said, I'm deafblind. And they said, how do you know how to type? And the person was really angry saying, this question shouldn't be asked by a disabled person like myself. And he said, do you use a braille display? And they said, oh yeah. And he said, then go and think about it. And the braille display is a device that I can use to type and it doesn't talk. You can read just with your finger. Yeah. You don't need eyes, you don't need ears to do those. And I felt a little bit embarrassed, like what I did. But what I did is like, I contacted them back and I said, yeah, my bad, I've got to do more research on this. And just 2 weeks ago, I learned a lot about deaf culture through Mobility International in the US, where we had a panel where I talked about international education for the disabled people. And how disabled people could be better served by the State Department, because they send us like the two exchange programs, like Fulbright, and what like the communities and how to find new friends in your new place and all of that. But what is really for me not something that I'm happy with is, why are we approached only by religious people?
Okay.
Right. So why don't atheists or agnostics do more to include people with disabilities in their communities? Is that what I'm?
Yes. Like, for example, when I came to the U.S., a lot of people that were part of my life in my first semester were Christians. As a result, I lost all of them after a second semester, because I wouldn't, you know, follow up going to church or all of that. My second semester was the same thing. New Christians, they left. And I finally were able to make friends in my second year after meeting friends through friends, meeting people on the streets, but not all disabled people. Like for me, when I came to the States, I went out and I was lost and I started making friends that way. But not everyone is courageous enough to go out and just get lost and trust strangers the way I do. Yeah. So I am hoping that other non-religious people also could approach. I know that we atheists have, we say that everyone, individuals are free, to do whatever they want. And I understand why we don't approach people on the streets or at schools or something. But I think there's a huge need in the disabled community, especially those who are struggling, needing that friend, for example, that they can at least text and say, oh, I am not happy here, or I'm not happy with what's going on with my family or with my community or something, to just have someone to voice themselves to. And I was talking to a lot of disabled friends, interviewing them, and how they even have to go fake on social media. Thanks to technology now, they can voice themselves, but still it's not something that is going to help them overcome what they are facing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess being an atheist, the issue that comes with being an atheist is that it doesn't promise any sort of support group, it doesn't promise any sort of community, it's just a lack of belief in a mm-hmm. God. So it can be, if it's already hard for non-disabled people to mm-hmm. find their community when they leave religion, I can't imagine if you're also disabled and you're facing that that extra stigma that you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine.
Yeah, and also there are different types of disabilities, like as when Eric asked me, and I was saying, well, like how to communicate with a blind is not how to communicate with a deaf or a paraplegic or quadriplegic or a mute, or, you know, it disabilities differ as a result, their needs also differ, you know. Some disabled people are, you know, they need more support, therefore they're stuck with religious organizations, because that's the only way. Some disabled communities need more social connections. Like for me, I was at school and I was a grad student and I couldn't make friends with, I was taking, the only classes that I made friends are classes that outside of my department. I couldn't make friends in my department. I tried my best. And when I went to social psychology department and the English studies department, I was able to communicate with classmates there. But in the other class, like even one of my professors asked me, do you want me to take you to church so that you can meet God? And I'm like, I'm here for office hours. Mm-hmm. And when I told them no, they never replied to my email. And I never got any feedback on my assignments. How religion makes the disabled people being treated is really, really something that needs to be addressed. And I'm thankful to those religious folks that help the disabled communities. But what I'm hoping for is, yes, thank you for help, but don't wait for something in return, because if there is nothing, then you just discard that person. We're not a trash. We're human beings.
Just help us with no strings attached.
Yeah.
So if you had like a blank check, you could write as big of a check as you'd want, what would you like to see happen for folks with disabilities? What could you see being something that would be a good start to being a good setup?
More education, more social support, more training on independency, not training on how to eat or dress or talk, but more like, give me a fish, but I mean, don't give me a fish, but show me how to fish. You know, it's like education, because for me, there's no way I could come out of abuse that I was facing in Morocco without education. And the wonderful thing is it's free. There is a library for the disabled international, Bookshare, $50 a year to get any book you want on the planet. Give them education so that they can have that weapon to fight for themselves.
Wait. There is something out there. I could, every year I pay $50 and it and a person, a disabled person would have access to a book that they need?
Yes, every book on the planet that is published in an accessible format. And I didn't have access to that when I was in Morocco. I had access to Allah, which didn't help me in any way. And so are other religious, like disabled people who have to be religious or who are religious by force or by forced choice. It's like how life forced it on them. Sometimes it's life, sometimes it's forced by humans. And if it costs $50 for a disabled person to access worldwide library to read in a format that is accessible to them, there are a lot of resources that help with education. And I think it's, sometimes I say it's a lack of interest with a lot of societies. Like a few weeks ago, I spoke about refugee resettlement organizations and how myself, as an example, here in the States, I had to withdraw because I didn't like how I was treated, period. I had to let go and survive on my own or the help of my friends because, yes, we're disabled, but the fact that most of the times we would be seen as helpless, not helpless in the physical way. Of course, I can't see, but I can do a lot of things. Not like sometimes people would think that we don't even think, we don't have the ability to think. Well, anyone who would think that I just got my master, I just found the university, put it there for me as a gift? That is impossible, that can't be it. Or my undergrad or all the education that I've received. And the disabled communities, there are a lot of them who are hoping. There are a lot of them who personally I know, and they tell me, you're so lucky to go through that education. A few, a year ago, when I was working on my research, someone from Indiana contacted me and he said, you are so lucky. I was at the university for 19 years and I was not able to get my degree. I forgot the grade he said he got. My friend has it. I can share it later. But he, 2 point something, and he didn't graduate for 19 years. And I felt sad and speechless because I was able to get my undergrad in 3 years with the highest grade in the country, despite of all the difficulties that I was having in Morocco, and the same with my master's degree in the States with all A's. But the support I get, yes, I am smart and I work hard, but I'm not going to deny my friends support. They have been very, very, very supportive. And I question why there is not many of my friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to remember the name of that organization that that folks could, $50 a year, get
Oh, yeah, Bookshare.
Bookshares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Because I remember as a kid, my parents would set up this thing with World Vision that we would send like $2 a month or whatever the hell to some preachers in Africa or some. And I'm thinking I would have much rather had my money go towards this instead of preachers in Africa now. Mm-hmm. So Bookshare. Okay. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah, and it's really amazing. They featured me on the 30th anniversary of ADA and how ADA has helped me here in the States, and technology and their library specifically has been a great support. Like in the past, I had to get a copy of some books or whatever and have my sighted friends read it to me when I was in Morocco. And like if $50 can make someone educated enough to know that there are other resources out there, there is a degree that I can get that can help me get work and be independent and not be forced to go to mosque or church or temple. And I hope that in my lifetime, I can see that happen. I can see a lot of disabled people coming out to help each other, to support each other, because there is a lot of oppression and there is a lot of needs, and we're beyond left behind, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you so much for sharing the Bookshare website project thing, because I had no idea that existed. So I'm so happy that you shared it. I'm sure so many people are going to be able to benefit from it. And now it's kind of like a kind of closure question. I just want to know what sort of tips can you give us able-bodied people to make the lives of those with a disability easier? What can we do to help?
Most of the times, just socializing. Mm-hmm. And I think I can't speak for all disabled people, but most of them, they are open. They accept if they have like a need that is to be met, they will ask for it. They will ask someone. Like, for example, when I had my religious friends, the hardest thing that I had was they wouldn't go with me out for coffee. And I am a crazy coffee lover. Like, I just, like, if someone would say, you know what, next week I'm going to invite you out for coffee, that's what I love. Like, I can go, I'm not saying like, oh, I need people to pay for my coffee or something. Like, just that company to go out for a drink or to go out for a walk. Or, for example, I love biking with my friends with double bike. I love, there are things that we can do, but socializing has different ways to be done. So that and how to, like, when you talk to disabled persons, for me, I had to be very careful lately with when people approach me on the street, because I'll be like, oh, this person is religious. That what they want, like, if I am nice to them and I give them my name, sometimes if they ask for my phone number, I'll be like, yes, I know this is a religious person. And if I give them my phone number, they distribute it, and after a month I have to change it. If I don't change it, I get tons of calls every day from different religious organizations saying that we invite you because of this or that or this. I think the way we are being approached also has to be changed, not only when it comes to praying, but also like grabbing someone from the head or the shoulder or the stick, as I said before. Yeah. Well, that is kind of like that fear that the social norms have ejected in people's brains, that saying that in someone's brain, they would think that I shouldn't touch that person with disability. And unfortunately, religious texts highlight that in a very good way. I mean, sarcastically speaking, it's like, if you do this, God will punish you with this and you will become disabled and you will become blind. There's examples of like, you're going to be blind, you're going to be deaf, you're going to be mute, you're going to have some skin disease. And so instead, I was hoping to find a religion that would say, it's okay, even disabled people are fine, even though they happen to have some disability, but it's fine. But unfortunately, there is no such thing. We have to fix them. Even the New Testament in Christianity, which is the lightest, it says you have to wait, because one day you will not be disabled again. And I hope that there will be a day where we will have like something like ADA that says disabled people have the right to this and this and this. Instead of saying we have to wait until they are no longer disabled.
So it sounds like what you're suggesting is, hey, just treat them like normal human beings and be their friend.
Yeah, simple, right? How easy is that, Eric?
That is super easy.
Why people try to grab the stick or like talking in front of you? Or when I was in Morocco, these two women were helping me and they were talking about me, and they were speaking English because they were somehow able to know that I could hear them. And they were like, he, she, and they were fighting about my gender. And in Morocco, even if I were gay, there is no way, like the way I would dress, I am a she by default. So That's another big topic. But until they got me to cross and they said, well, I am a she, and if you want to learn English, I'm here to help you. And we became friends after that, but it was weird, like how we have to be very, very careful and afraid of the disabled, which I don't understand why.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you have been praised and just are so grateful and inspirational. Folks in the chat are just talking you up. They're so, so grateful that you're here.
Same here.
Very happy to hear your message. We can go ahead and move on to the Q&A, but before we do you have any last words you'd like to kind of share before we start asking you some questions?
The last thing I would say, we're not created equal, but we are evolved different. Therefore, we have to accept and embrace differences.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Ito. Sonia's going to go ahead and ask you the first question, which is, why would a disabled person need to pretend they believe in a god? So you kind of touched on this already in the talk, but just to reiterate.
Basically, as simple as it is, to survive socially, sometimes financially, sometimes to not lose families or communities. And that's sometimes life, in my case. If I said I was not a Muslim in Morocco, it would cost me my life.
Cool. Then someone else asks, how in Morocco, is it preferable to say people with disabilities or disabled people? So I know you kind of said that you personally don't mind, but in terms of like a country, is there like a preference?
We have Morocco. I don't know if this person knows much about Morocco, but we don't speak English, so it's another word, which is sometimes we use French. Sometimes we use native languages, like my language, which actually doesn't have the word for disabled. We just say blind or deaf. And we have words for like slangs that are bad if they're used according to the social norms, but we have like handicapped in French, which is handicapé, the same.
Just out of curiosity, is there something similar to the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, in Morocco at all?
No, actually, when I was at the university, I had to sign documents saying that if I fail, it's my fault.
Oh my gosh, really?
I know. And I was like, it was really scary because I thought I wouldn't make it. And the only reason I made it is I had my American friends as my umbrella, and my professors were very respected. Like, they would even put me in front of the class and say, look at her, she is blind, but she speaks English. I'm like, well, I don't speak from my eyes for sure. You know, like, I don't need to be excited to speak English.
So like here in the US, you've only been here for a little while, the Americans with Disability Act kind of helped to mandate curb cuts, like those ramps that we see at the crosswalks, and also ramps to go upstairs, and even like beeps that we hear at the crosswalks. How has have those things been helpful to you, or what's been your experience between the two countries?
Actually, it is really funny and sad to compare the two in different ways. Just this morning, I had to do a lot of things that one of them would take me a whole day in Morocco. Like, for example, just not only like with ADA, like technology, that is assistive technology. And in my classes in Morocco, there is no such thing as, like, you have to take test the same time that the non-disabled people take it. Like, if it's an hour, it's an hour. Not like in the States, double time. I had to do all of that, and my professors would be like, yeah, but still you got 19. And I'd be like, yeah, I know. But there are disabled people who wouldn't be able to get 19 because they need more time For me, as I said, I was lucky to have a personal assistant to read to me and help me and explain to me all the courses. So when I went to my exams, I was prepared like 100% to even answer it most of the times orally in 5 minutes and even quicker than non-disabled people. But for example, when I came to the States, the first time I felt very, very happy with the ADA is when I had my asylum interview and I was flying back, and at the airport, there was a delay and I almost missed my flight, and it waited for me just because I'm disabled. And I was like, wow. In Morocco, I was not even allowed to go to the hotel because I'm blind. I was not even allowed to go on the first class in the train, or I was not allowed to do a lot of things. I was not even qualified to get a passport until my American friends had to interfere.
Morocco wouldn't let you get a passport because of your disability?
Yeah, because basically what would I need the passport for?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of feeds into a lot of religious folks, they say they get their strength from their God, but that's obviously not the case for you. Where would you say that you get your strength from, to your drive from? Where would you say that comes from?
I have my answer to that, but it's really weird that I am very, very, very positive. Like, sometimes my friends would feel stressed if something is going on in my life. But I am really, I think that is like just my brain, because I've been in survival, mm-hmm. since I was a child. I just got used to fighting. And I think the fact that I, basically everything that I was fighting, I won. And I just got used to that. So I hope I will keep winning. But it is really, even as I said, even for me, I have very positive view in life. I have like my dreams and my goals that I'm really happy working on. Even like, for example, I can talk about homelessness. When I was homeless, it was like, the snow, as I said in my article, I smelled food that I never got to eat. And in Morocco, especially in religious holidays, where everyone is slaughtering the animal, and you can't even find food outside. Like, you can't even find stores. So if you're homeless, you starve. And the only way I survived that, which was so funny, was I was imagining myself being in America. And I told the director of the school for the blind, and he told me, America, go away. If homelessness accepts you for the rest of your life, that's the best of it. And I was really unhappy, and I told him, well, no, I am going to America. And I was so delighted when I talked to him from America. And I said, yeah, I'm here.
Well, it's amazing that now you're living there and you're happy, as you say that you are. And it's just amazing to see you thrive. Yes, so I think that is all of the questions. If I'm not forgetting any, Eric, can you confirm that for me?
Yeah, that's all the questions. So Ido, we have, after we kind of talk about the next session, and Dr. Del Rey comes on and regales us with his wisdom, we kind of shut the recording off and have a hangout. Would you have some time to kind of hang out with our well over 60 guests tonight?
I will. I have to see if my friend needs to leave or not. But can I let you know in a few seconds or minute?
Sounds like a plan. All right. Well, thank you,
guys.
Thank you so, so much. This was so inspirational, and it
I'm glad.
Kind of puts my life into focus a little bit too. It's like, if you can overcome this kind of stuff, then what am I whining about?
Thank you so much, guys, and I appreciate you, and thanks to everyone for joining us, and please stay safe.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.